Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Russians.
This ain't gonna be easy.
Not as easy as it used to be.
Well, we've been through worse.
Yeah? When?
Flensburg. There was twice as many.
We were younger.
I still am young.
We had guns. Put your hands down, will you? You're embarrassing us.
Looking for a date?
This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Film Sack. This is episode 408 of Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. I'm Scott Johnson. Joining me today, Brian, never let a LaBeouf use the ladder, Dunaway.
Oh, yes, I've made some poor life choices, that's for sure, Scott. Oh, hi.
Hi.
Yes, this is Spielberg. What am I doing right now? Well, I'm just sitting here chilling and eating some fried chicken with my good buddies George Lucas and Kathleen Kennedy. Like we do every Saturday night. What's that? We want to do another Indiana Jones film? Nah, I don't think so. Wait, hold on. George is handing me something. Something he wrote on the inside of my oven. Empty KFC family meal-sized chicken bucket. Oh, it's really greasy. Like one of those guys from the 50s. And now I can see that it is an outline for Indiana Jones 4. So, to answer your question, maybe. I mean, I don't think we can top the first three movies. Those movies had like Nazi face-melting arcs and stolen power stones in the hands of a mad voodoo heart doctor. And then that one with the cup of everlasting life with the caveat of having to live alone forever in a cave full of cups you can't even drink from. All right. But I'm sure we could come up with something. Uh-oh. Hold on a second. George is ransacking the fridge. Hey, George, stop throwing my food on the floor, you freak. No, don't crawl in there. Now he shut the door. All right. Looks like I'll have to get back to you on this, Harrison. Capital idea, old boy. Highest marks. Gotta go. Kathleen, grab that prop ET finger over there, and let's see if we can prod George to open that fridge. Crap. Look out. He's got the poison darts to keep in the fridge. Drop dead, George. Sorry, I meant drop dead. Turtleneck.
Yeah, well done.
Actually, man.
You actually meant
you're
turtleneck.
Welcome for the theater.
Yeah, I enjoyed the theater. That's great.
I closed my eyes and I could actually smell the fried chicken.
Yeah, I feel like I need to drive home safely and go get my valet and get my car back. This is all good. Thank you for the good times. Hey, let's now move over to Randy. These ants taste terrible, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian.
Hi.
Randy. Did I ever tell you boys about the time I ran a little business setting up little fake towns?
Nope.
Yep. We called it Hot Rod Facades, and we was known for getting all the details right that all the other fake town companies overlooked. Sure, anyone can hang some fake clothes on a fake clothesline, but at Hot Rod Facades, we made sure it was a load of laundry that made sense from a color point of view. When your analysts come in later and look at the ashes of the little fake town that you set up, they ain't gonna get good data if that fake clothesline has both white shirts and red linens. Now is they?
Now is they?
But no working water.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good point. Oh yeah, no working. Well, no, outside they have the sprinklers and everything going.
Yeah. 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 They have the guy washing his car.
Yeah, that's true.
But no working water in the spigot. I don't know.
I agree.
I was like, why? Why would that not be working?
I find that stuff creepy as hell. Finally with us, Brian, when in doubt, do like Tarzan, Ibbit.
And on that same note.
Oh, great.
Oh, hi. Yes. You're from the Department of Defense. Yes. Yes. I know. Your secretary let us know that you'd be coming down here to Operation Doorstep, our little fake nuclear mannequin town corner of the desert. And your courier arrived yesterday with your list. So I appreciate you having that sent down in preparation for your arrival. I did have some questions, though, if you don't mind. Great. They mostly have to do with the things you're wanting to test in our town. Let's see. First thing, you're wondering if a newspaper held by a paperboy on a bicycle would withstand a nuclear blast. I can pretty much save us all a lot of setup on this one. The answer. Okay. All right. Well, it's your money. All right. Fine. Okay. Another item on your list. You want us to leave the TV on to see if the nuclear blast will change the channel? It seems like a big expense to run some electricity out to the town, set up a TV antenna just to see. Okay, again, it's your money. All right, let me skip down the list a few here. Slip and slide, popsicles. Oh, here we go. Number 27. Yeah, the refrigerator. No, we don't have an issue with using the King Cool Leadline brand. It's the Crisco, sir. You're not supposed to refrigerate Crisco.
Yes, you are.
You know, maybe.
No, you're not.
No, you're not. You shouldn't refrigerate Crisco.
You live in a very hot place. Yes, you are.
Okay,
well,
if
okay,
it's
if you're in a hot place, yes.
If it's
but
Phoenix,
if you just keep it in a
fine.
Pantry in a cool, dry place.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you don't need a refrigerator.
If you live in Phoenix and don't believe in air conditioning, put your Crisco in the fridge.
I actually did look at Crisco's FAQs this morning when I was writing my
really?
Intro.
Oh yes. Wow, whoa. Man, that's a thorough podcast.
Darn right, I don't mess around, my friends.
No, you don't.
How to keep Crisco in Nevada desert. Let's see.
Well, yeah, if you live in Las Vegas, I think all bets are off.
It is kind of funny how we have all focused pretty squarely on the opening, 10 minutes of the movie or so, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting because it's the part that actually, I have so much to say about Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull that came out 9 years ago now, which seems like crazy that it was that long ago. And I have long considered it the worst thing I'd seen.
11 years ago, is it?
It was 08.
What year is it?
Close enough.
Is it? What year is it? Oh, my God.
It's 2019. It was 2008. That's 9 years.
Again. Right, that's 9 years.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Wait, no, that's... You're right, that's 11 it's years. Okay. Is that 11 years? It is.
It's 11 years! Oh,
yeah,
my God!
No, my brain went backwards. That's...
Scott does math. It's known.
Oh, that's even weirder now to think of it that way. But, right. All right. Anyway, here's the thing that I've never told anybody, and I think it's important to mention this up front because it didn't occur to me until I watched it yesterday again, and this is only the second time I've seen it. First time was in the movie theater. We rented out an entire theater, or we didn't, but a friend of the family has a business, and they thought, hey, we'll cut work out early and rent this theater. Do you guys want to come? We have extra seats. We said, sure. So we went to this rented out theater, and the movie got as far as the anthill scene, and everybody was doing the ant thing, and then all the film shuts off, and a bunch of emergency lights come on in the movie theater, and the voiceover comes over and goes, ladies and gentlemen, there is a fire. Please do not panic.
Oh my gosh.
Please get up and move in an orderly fashion. Right? So they told you what to do and what exits to take and all of that. And we're like, whoa, what the hell's going on? All right. In the end, it turned out to be some idiot kid who worked in the food area in the main part of the theater burned a pizza or something in an oven.
Overbaked a churro.
Yeah, something like that. And then it caught on fire and they just have, rules. So when the rules kick in, you got to go outside. So we had to go outside and stand around, and we stood around for like another hour and a half outside.
Holy Moses.
Yeah, it sucked. I mean, it was a nice time of year, so it wasn't cold or hot or anything. But anyway, you're just out there kind of hanging around. And then when they right toward the, when they were getting close to having everybody get in, I said, you know what? I kind of hate everything that I already saw, so I'm just going to, and this is for free. It's not like I'm paying anything for this.
Right.
Kim and we're just going to go to Chick-fil-A or something and just like call it a day. So that's what we did. We left, and I forgot that we did that because in my mind I saw the whole movie. I haven't seen everything from the ants on.
Oh, really?
This was your first time of watching the movie the whole way through?
The whole way through. It's just because I completely forgot I'd only seen part of it, and the part I had seen which is a good two-thirds or more.
Yes, yeah, it's a pretty good long way in there.
Yeah,
you hadn't even gotten to the three drops yet. I mean,
no,
come on.
And I hadn't done the whole ship bit at the end or any of that stuff. It was all new to me. Yeah. So that was an odd experience last night because I'm like, oh,
wait,
yeah,
so
ants.
How did
here's
you
the
know,
ants.
How did you know it was, because we talked about this before and it was like, oh, aliens. How did you know it was aliens?
Oh, you know aliens early on.
Oh, that.
Because the aliens.
Yeah, they do that earlier because in the camp.
Yeah,
in the camp, they show the aliens.
Like confirmed and stuff.
But, oh, well, yeah. you're right. Like, it isn't really till the end that they go, oh, full on, we're going full space saucer here.
Interdimensional.
But you're, yeah. but early enough, it was enough. And I don't know. I just, boy, what a. What a bummer I thought this movie was then. Now, I actually, here's the funny thing. I still
oh,
think
no.
it,
I no,
still
think no.
No, no,
I don't
no,
know
no,
if
no,
I
no.
want to hear this.
I'm not going that far. I'm not going that far. I am going to say this though. I think there are moments in this movie that are pretty fun. I think the ant thing is very traditional Indiana Jones and very fun scene. I really enjoy
There's
it.
There's a lot of throwbacks. Like I forgot how often in this movie you're watching a new take on the template. Like it almost could put up the word template on the screen where it's like, okay, now we're going to have Indiana Jones and Shia LaBeouf go into a cave that's got traps,
right? Yeah. Like the opening of Raiders.
Template scene.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean?
is it a template or is it just them saying, let's just borrow stuff that we did in all the other movies. Instead of having them come, fly out of a plane on a raft, let's have them go down a bunch of waterfalls.
But it's a part four. You got to get over that, or you're never gonna like any movie in a series.
Maybe, but I would have liked
part four.
I don't have a problem with them reaching back. Like I said, I think the ant scene is fun. I think the raft scene's okay. I can't stand the forest chase with the cars because nothing looks real.
I'm going to say the forest chase is
through the
forest chase.
Does everybody else get the feeling that they were trying? You know, like, do you remember when we went and saw when we all saw Star Wars Episode 7, and then Brian Dunaway came in and was like, you know, they put that red arm on C-3PO so they could sell toys, and you're like, yeah. Wow. Like, did everybody else feel like they were trying to design a theme park with rides?
Absolutely.
Oh, sure.
I felt like that. I was like, this would be the coolest ride in a theme park. I did actually think exactly
I think
that
if the movie had done better, I mean, it did okay because it's Indiana Jones and you're going to sell
it
tickets.
It did great. It's the highest one, not adjusting for inflation, but
well,
it brought
highest
the most money.
Opening
in.
Weekend probably contributed to that. Yeah, they did really well because, again, expectations
are high.
And I
got to say, this is
that.
In my top five of Indiana Jones movies.
Your top five. Yeah. Now, before we get too far away from what Randy said, I do want to clarify. When Tina and Tristan and I went to Japan back in 2015 or whenever it was, we went to Tokyo Disney, and there's like the regular Magic Kingdom side, but then there's also a part called Tokyo Disney Sea, which is like the California Adventure of Tokyo Disney. It's like all the other rides.
Okay.
And one of the rides they have there is Indiana Jones and the Temple of the Crystal Skull.
Okay.
I think they like this movie a lot more than we did.
Yeah. I remember you saying something about this, and isn't it all themed like it? Like they have the crystal skull?
Yeah. So, like,
that?
The waiting area that you're in is kind of like the, the area you walk through is kind of like the last temple that you're in. The crystal skull is actually there at the beginning of the ride. Your car, like, drives towards it, and it's the thing that causes the one of two directions that you go through the ride. Mm-hmm. The rest of it is very similar to the Indiana Jones ride in California, as far as like you've got the big skull with the fire in his eyes and kind of driving across the bridge and having the ball kind of chase you a little bit. But there are elements as you go through this thing.
How does the ball just chase you a little bit? How does that happen? I want to. Yeah.
It chases you a little bit. And then you go underneath it.
Yeah.
don't chase me, ball.
Hold on.
It's good.
Are you in a mine cart in the Japanese one?
You're in the same kind of Jeep that you were in.
Oh, okay.
And,
I always wanted that to be more of a mine cart, you know? Because honestly, one of the best set pieces in Temple of Doom is that minecart bit, and
it is the part of all four movies that feels most like a theme park ride.
Yeah,
like that would be the perfect roller coaster to go through.
Well, I no longer wonder why Shia LaBeouf turned right around and acted in the movie Nymphomaniac Part 1, because this movie had his nuts crushed to nothing from multiple whacks from bushes while he was driving through that forest.
Someone did seem to hate his crotch because it was under constant attack.
Yeah. I can't think of another movie where an obvious protagonist, like the good guy who survives and everything, is also the butt monkey as much as this one. Like,
butt monkey swinging through the forest.
And I cannot call him Henry Jones III. I won't do it. No. He is Shia LaBeouf. That's it.
He's Shia LaBeouf playing Shia LaBeouf. I can't even call Indiana Henry Jones II. I can't even do that.
What would you call the dog?
Indiana is what I'd call the dog. But here's the thing. I don't think any of us are stupid. So I think we all know that the idea here was probably to pass the torch and that he would be our new guy.
That's a good question.
It's a terrible idea.
That's a good question, though. Was that always a misdirection? Because at the end, when the hat flows back in during the wedding, Indiana does not give his hat up.
No,
exactly. It would have been a very easy thing for them to commit to that and say, yeah, we are passing the torch on to Shia, and let Shia pick up the hat and put it on, and then the credits roll.
They want us to believe it.
Knowingly into the distance and the credits roll. But
all I know is I'm eternally grateful that is not the case, and that he has not made five movies.
We still got one
movies.
Coming in 2021. We'll see. Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Is he in it? Is he cast?
I don't know. Okay. I don't know any information about it other than it comes out in 2021.
This isn't going to be me just hating on Shia LaBeouf. I think he's kind of a twerp and a ding-dong in real life and says a lot of dumb shit.
This, however, will be the part where
this is the part right by him. But in terms of his acting acumen and his ability to be in a movie and play a part, he's fine. Like, he's really good in Fury, that tank movie. Kind of jaw-dropping.
He plays a very specific role, and he does it well.
Yeah.
And so I don't hate him for that.
He's fine.
I didn't miss him one bit in Bumblebee.
Yeah, no, I didn't miss him at all, dude. Oh my gosh. I'll take 1,000 Haley Steinfelds over one Shia LaBeouf. But I just think it's a bad character. I hate everything about the character. I don't think it fits here. I don't think they needed it. I don't think they needed to drag Marion out again, and if they did, it was the wrong way to do it.
I'm glad they drug Marion out, because I liked it. I liked that part.
You liked Marion bits?
I didn't mind Marion coming back. And I liked seeing it again. This is probably the third time I've seen the movie. Also, once in the theaters and then once on video several years ago.
Videotape?
Not tape. Video disc, it could be. Or video streaming video. Mm-hmm. I don't
video
know.
Video PSP, UMD?
I could have watched it on UMD. Who knows? I might have actually had UMD of this one.
Oh my gosh.
No, I think I just had the Fifth Element, and that's it.
Yeah.
Everyone
did. Everyone had the Fifth Element and Spider-Man 2.
What choice did you have?
Spider-Man 2.
Yes.
Yeah. Spider-Man, that's right. Yeah.
That's right. Anyway, I didn't remember liking Marion being in this movie as much as I did during this watch. Like, she's one of the bright spots for me.
I'll admit I liked her better here, but then again, in the first viewing, I didn't get to see it all the way through. So maybe I was left wanting because I only got up to the ant part. But she's fine. Whatever. I just think his character as this scruffy, angry mutt character who's like the rebellion age in the 50s and calling everybody daddy-o and stuff.
He's absolutely rebel without a cause. He's modeled to look just like James Dean and act just like James Dean in Rebel Without a Cause and
costume
be angry for the only reason that he didn't grow up with a daddy.
Right.
Right. As a character, I think with the time period, I think it was appropriate for the conflict you're wanting to set up between Indiana and Mutt in the time period. I think it was important to represent his character in that way. I don't know how you could be in this setting with this cast not go that direction.
But that was my other problem, is the setting. And I understand that Harrison Ford did not go backwards in time, that he is an older guy here. He's in his 60s here, late 60s. Mm-hmm. Now he's 72, so he'd only been in early 60s then. He's not going to, they got to follow the timeline. If he's a young swashbuckling dude in the 30s and 40s, then you got to move him to the 50s. I get it. But I kind of wish they just didn't embrace the whole, here we are in a 50s diner and a fight breaks out between the jocks and the stoner guy or the greasers. And I didn't I didn't like any of that. And then that just leads to, well, in the 50s, what was the hot thing? Ooh, alien invasions and Area 51 and all this stuff. I just wish they'd have gone traditional. There are millions of weird, old, legendary archaeological ideas that they could have gone to. Why they had to go to this freaking alien head thing, I just cannot get my head around.
Probably my biggest complaint with the film is how much is required of explanation and realization that you're just now having after a 55-year career of doing all of this. You're just now realizing this obvious thing, apparently. Mm-hmm. Like, all that happens so much in this movie. But you realize, hey, if we can just explain anything into the plot, then we could have had a better plot.
Mm-hmm. Well, back to I think back to Scott's question of the time period. I think the reason why it turned out like it did, Indiana Jones has always been the first kernel of the idea is always, what do we want to pay an homage to? The original Indiana Jones was that homage to the serials, and this was they wanted to take Indiana Jones into the 50s sci-fi, and that's how you end up with everything else. So that was, from my understanding of what I've read about, their thought process, it started there, and then they mixed in the thing. So, 50s sci-fi is a very specific looking genre that you can really see. And so they put all these tropes in. How well they did it, there was a lot. They put a lot in it. There's a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did they do well? In parts, I was entertained.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, in parts. Sure.
Right.
Sure. I mean, again, I think when it was the most referential of previous Indiana Jones movies and the action that those movies had, I felt at home. It was like, him getting out of the back of that truck and punching the driver and tossing him out the side, and you only get to see him getting tossed out the side. I mean, it's like this very traditional thing. Or a foreign agent of ill repute looking at the camera and saying shit in whatever language is theirs, and the German in the old movies, Russian in this one. Like, that's very Indiana Jones, and that feels comfortable, like an old shoe. When it got weird for me, and you know what, I thought I was going to come back to this and go, oh, I just can't stand that he's so freaking old. That's just me being ageist. He's fine in this.
Oh yeah,
there's nothing wrong with a 62-year-old Harrison Ford. He's buffed out, looks great.
And his stunt doubles were directed really well. I was amazed at how much I felt like even these younger guys looked like him and sort of had this older man's gestures. Mm-hmm. Like, I
body
really
posture,
liked it.
Everything.
Well, they claim the trivia claims that a lot of the stunts were him, like him climbing up the boxes in the warehouse is him, diving through the car is him.
Right.
So supposedly that's him. I don't know
sliding across the floor in the library.
The motorcycle stuff was, the motorcycle stuff looked amazing.
Yeah,
it
was good.
The chase through town, they cut that so well, and they just always seemed convincing. I don't think I ever went, that's not Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
But Brian, did you also get the feeling like there was just one too many car chases, one too many fist fights,
I did not realize until this viewing how many action scenes there were.
There weren't enough, in my opinion.
The car chase, car motorcycle chase across campus. You've got the Jeep chase that basically ends with the ants.
Well, you forget about in the beginning.
Yeah, the car chase out of the hangar.
Yeah, you got that.
Oh, the rocket out of the hangar. Well,
Yeah,
rocket chase.
No, there's a legit car chase. They're in these military vehicles inside the hangar, trying to drive out.
Okay. Yeah. Yes,
that's the thing. And that's the thing, Brian. We're all gonna forget like 7 of the 12 car chases in this movie. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The opening scene is actually a race with a hot rod in military trucks. I mean, this thing is constantly just going, moving.
I think Randy has a point. But I would actually, this is going to sound counterintuitive, but I actually wish there was more, maybe better, but more action, because there is a lot of downtime, especially in the first half. Just lots of sitting around talking to Jim Broadbent or freaking arguing with the kid at the diner. There's a lot of boring nothing, and I could have used more action, but I could have used better action than I think that we ended up getting. But I think you make a fair point. And by the end of this thing, I'm not exhausted in a fun way. I'm exhausted and like, all right. A lot of that was CG. Like some of the action, the thing that made the old movies great, it was either practical stuff or really innovative miniatures or something that they, you know, pulled off back in the 80s that was amazing. And you were like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they pulled that off. Like the minecart scene, just a bunch of little miniatures, and it looks so good even today. And this thing, it's just like, yeah, I can see all your 2008 freaking CGI flying by. It's just not.
Yeah, and it was mostly in prairie the forest.
Yeah,
the prairie dog was that was unnecessary, and then the
that really felt George Lucas-y. I felt like George Lucas. Yes.
That was a moment of chuckling.
Had walked onto set and was like, hey, can we get something cute to observe all this?
Can we get some prairie dogs like going, what's up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I get it. And I think you're 100% right. But it's part of what I dislike about George Lucas these days is he just can't help himself but go, what if we had these prairie dogs who act a little too human, or it's just a little too on the nose with the jokey joke? Like, no, don't do it. Like, don't. Not everything has to be C-3PO arguing with R2. Like, mm-hmm. back off that stuff. And I don't need an, I'm not saying I need an edgy movie.
The good news is, Scott, you've ran George Lucas out of town. He doesn't want to make your movies anymore. And he just kind of, you know,
wants
to be left alone.
Is he writing the 2021 one? Do we know?
That's a good question. Writing, I'm not sure about. Let's see.
Yeah. Huh. Probably executive producing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure he's got his name on it. This is actually the first Indiana Jones movie that had the Lucasfilm intro. Mm. They never did that before.
Yeah, which I
Yeah, which is kind of cool. But anyway, so a couple of bits of trivia is pretty weird. Harrison Ford was adamant that he got to wield the famous whip. Paramount executives wanted the weapon to be computer generated because of new film safety rules. The actor branded the rule ridiculous. That rule belongs in a museum, Dad, he says. And then they let him use it for more of the stuff. And then several weeks into production, Harrison Ford saw a blonde woman on the set and asked who she was. I love this one. He was told it was Cate Blanchett, whom he had been working with in costume and didn't recognize her without the black wig. I just love this idea of 62-year-old Harrison Ford going, hey, how are you? Who are you?
Who's that woman over there? Yeah, well, get off my set, he said.
And then no Pat Roach this time. You know, your big, burly dude to fight. He died because he died in 04 or whatever. So you couldn't have him. But well,
and of course, no Sean Connery, which is like a big letdown when you're watching the movie and you just keep hoping, oh, they got to trot out Sean Connery. Like it's such a I don't even know. Like it would be like going to watch a Star Wars sequel and you never once hear the Imperial March.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't want the picture of him on the desk looking up longingly was enough because
it was the worst.
He did come along in the Last Crusade, but he really he wasn't there the whole series. So it's okay if we leave him behind because you really want the grandpa dad trifecta argument? Would you really want?
No, you don't. No. And here's the thing: the original script had Henry Jones Sr., Short Round, Sala, and Willie Scott. Oh, really? They all shows up. They all show up at the wedding at the end. That was the original plan.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Yes, that's where I was going. Like, don't give me this stupid picture on the desk. That just makes me want to see him. Give me him at the end. Give him one good line at the end of the film. Like, come on.
I'm just picturing. I can't help this, but I'm picturing all four of them sitting in the same row at the wedding. And it's old man Henry Jones.
I'm Short Round with the hat. Front row.
Yeah.
Right.
We eat monkey brains together.
Have you ever seen the movie Big Fish?
Yeah.
Yes, love Big Fish.
Yeah. At the end of Big Fish, every single character in the film shows up for a wedding at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Or no, I'm sorry, a funeral at the end.
Yeah.
And then they're all outside and there's this like parade of weirdness.
Yeah.
Like that's what I want.
Yeah.
I want this movie to end with every living character, every character. I guess there were some that didn't survive, right? Like
Saul is alive.
Big Fish, or are you talking about
Indiana Jones? No, in Indiana Jones.
Yeah. I don't know.
Brody.
How about
was
Jock?
Because that was his plaque. There.
How about Jock from the first
Yeah, we never do see Jock. once he says a snake on the plane, you're no longer a friend of me, Jock.
Oh, that's just my pet snake, Reggie, he always says. That's the most he got.
Were there any in the those monkeys that were flying through the air? Did any of them have any poison dates? Did anybody happen to?
No, but it would have been great if two or three of those made it to the wedding.
Showed up to the wedding. Yeah. So it's like you want more something like the game, the end of the game with Michael Douglas, where at the wedding it's everybody he's encountered there.
Yeah,
we were all just kidding all along. Right. Let's have a round of applause.
Yeah.
Look, the ark is actually hors d'oeuvres inside, and you can.
That'd be great.
You got a little. You got a monkey holding a jar with three or four of those red ants. It would be awesome.
Speaking of tropes like these, I don't have a name for it, but there's a trope that just bugged me in this film.
Yeah.
And that's where John Hurt's mind is addled, but then he gets released from the mind addling at some point.
Yeah.
And he's totally cool.
Yeah.
Right.
It was a jarring moment. I didn't like it.
It is the amnesia knock on the head to cause amnesia and then knock on the head to stop amnesia kind of thing.
Yeah. It's like when Homer got smart because he had a crayon up his nose. Do you guys remember that?
Yeah.
It reminds me of that.
The idea was, though, that he was carrying this immense amount of information with the communication with the skull until he was released from it, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the idea. That's the idea of it, but I don't know if it worked for me. And I miss John Hurt a lot. Like, I really think that guy is interesting.
Yeah.
And having him no longer be in movies is a real bummer to me. And obviously it sucks that he died in general, but he's like the same age as Harrison Ford, or roughly, when he died.
Right. So was he like 50s? He was only like 60s.
60 something. Yeah. Pretty young.
He's only 12 years older than Harrison Ford.
Right. So. That's a good point. And I wonder
was he 77? He was born in 1940. Yeah, he was 77. Wow.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, there's no way John Hurt survives going over those falls. I'm sorry.
None of them. None of them survived going over the three drops.
It's just a big boat of dead people in the movie would end
in there. Exactly.
Yeah.
So maybe the last scene is the afterlife, and we just haven't fully appreciated how complex this film is.
Whoa! And then the wedding is just this too perfect moment of magical things. Yeah, there's a hat blows in. They just don't know it. They're like lost. They're the lost people. They just don't know.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, they're in purgatory or whatever.
So that means Mac really didn't betray them, right? He's just because we ended with him being a double agent instead of a triple agent,
right? Right.
Right.
It's also the first film in the franchise, by the way, that Indy does not fire his pistol even once. There was never a gunshot from Indiana Jones.
This is 2008. Wait, no. Was Spielberg?
That's a lie. He shoots one of the guys that's about to kill Shia LaBeouf with the blow darts.
Yeah, and he shoots the shotgun.
No, he doesn't shoot him. He jumps up and plugs the hole.
No, he shoots. He shoots one of the blow dart guys. I could have sworn
he pulls the gun out, but he doesn't shoot him.
I don't think he shoots him. And the gun and the shotgun in the beginning, he just throws it on the ground. I'm not counting that one.
Right.
That doesn't work.
You're not going to count that?
No, because they didn't know it was going to fire. He just threw it on the ground.
Oh, he totally knew. He's Indiana Jones.
That's magical. Nope, not buying that one. But
you don't believe in magic? You watch this movie, you don't believe in magic?
Wow. Magic heads? Wrong here.
I mean, look, if you... Okay, hold on. The blow dart thing. Is it the one where he blew it back into the guy's throat, which is awesome, by the way?
That is awesome. Although, wouldn't you have the non-poisoned end of the blow dart?
Right. Well, I mean, if you blow it hard enough and it hits your brainstem, I guess it doesn't matter because you're out. But that was a very cool throwback to me, like the old, like controversial Indiana Jones of the 80s, where they're like, oh, we got to have a new rating system for movies. This is too hard.
What if it was a double-tipped dart? Maybe that's there's just some purpose for that.
Yeah,
right.
Two tips better, more likely to hit your target with two tips, just the tips. But anyway,
I think seeing these couple of Aztec tribes and different tribes that they encountered along the way, it really made me kind of go, ugh, I don't like how one dimensional these characters are. That they all just run around and with squat legs and and hop around and stuff. I'm like, I don't know if I like this representation of these tribal people. It's just a weird representation.
It felt like it was out of a template of Indiana Jones films, that anytime you go into any kind of crypt, whatever that may be, there are some harpy midget brown guys face paint on, and
just
all
they've just been sitting there waiting for somebody to show up.
Weird.
By the way, I did just scrub to that point in the movie on my iPad, and He pulls his gun out and the guy runs away.
Yeah, he never does. He's behind Shia LaBeouf.
Only slightly. I mean, that's the one trope they didn't wheel out again is the whole somebody being all fancy with their weapon and then him just shooting them. Like every movie's played off of that since Raiders, and this one didn't do that. So there's that.
I was trying to think of a moment when there was some, you know, over the top move, but I couldn't think of anything. There was some that almost reached it. Like, I know there's a scene where he's fighting the Russian and he nearly gets sucked into the blades and stuff. That one's.
Mm-hmm. That had a similar, that guy was basically the stand in for that.
This movie, however, had a continuity error throughout the whole film, almost from the beginning throughout the whole film. And I couldn't stop watching for it. And I was waiting for that continuity error to subvert the trope of the knife at a gunfight or whatever. And the continuity error is they just can't make up their minds about what is magnetized to that freaking skull.
Magnetism was terrible.
I'm so glad you brought that up. That's awesome. I love it.
You carry the skull into a Jeep and the skull doesn't just rip itself out of your hands right to the side of the Jeep.
The magnetic thing, always from the beginning when it was in that wooden box and then all of a sudden they start moving it and then the lights overhead start moving with it. I'm like, that makes no sense.
It got even worse because that continuity is even worse because it also, they made a point of how Crystal A shouldn't have possessed magnetism B, it's pulling stuff like gold, which is also not magnet affected.
But it's alien magnetism.
Right. Sure, yes, but then alien magnetism should be sucking everything from everywhere all the time. Like
it's selective alien magnetism.
That's the thing. That's my continuity error. We're okay with the phlebotomy. We're not okay with the inconsistency, and any viewer is going to eventually notice, right?
I thought about that too, and I'm really glad you brought it up because I forgot to write it down. But I hate that kind of stuff because the minute you open that can of worms, you're like, well, what about this? What about this? What about this? And it just compounds itself. And pretty soon you're like, well, what is this selective magnetism, as Ibbot says? Is it like, well, it's only good for scaring away the bugs because the bugs don't like the magnetism. But then sometimes Grandpa brings it out and a bunch of coins come his way, but that's it. And
I'm sure that they would say it has to do with a connection to a person, right? Like the whole time that John Hurt's handling it, it seems to be less magnetized or selectively magnetized. And so I'm sure they would say, well, you know, the lore here dictates that Hurt has this special connection and it turns off the magnetism or whatever. And that's fine, but you kind of have to present that. You can't just ask me to assume it.
Yeah.
Apparently you can.
Yeah. Apparently they can ask. Now whether you accept them or not is up to you. But it's a really funky thing. Here's what I like though. The movie decided in the one way it wanted to be a throwback, it would be very obvious about it. So here we are in that giant warehouse at the end of Raiders. And guess what? Here's a peek at the Ark, which is now broken open a slightly little bit. Here's the Ark of the Covenant. Ooh, I remember that from a movie a long time ago. And now they're running around Marshall College or whatever it was called. And what do you got in there?
Marcus is hit.
On the blackboard, you got Shankara stones from the thing are all drawn up there, and some names of the people from that movie. The only thing they didn't show is anything from the from the Grail, because what do you show? All that stuff stayed in the cave, right? It was all just you chose wisely to get the hell out of here. That was it.
Dirty cup on his desk would have been awesome.
That would have been great.
It would have. World's with carved in the side, world's great. Our number one archaeologist.
They did. Did you notice though when they're just yanking some boxes down on their way to the crystal skull?
Yeah.
That like they had a few broken open and just some like random like gold artifacts just sort of like strewn around the floor. That's one of those things where I'm just like, whoa, wait a minute. Indiana Jones is going to say something about that.
Right.
Surely.
Right. Nope. Also, the size of that place making me believe that your wreckage opened the actual Ark of the Covenant box in this vast, never-ending space. Mm-hmm. It's a little too convenient. You know,
it's a movie that is held together with coincidences.
Yeah. Yes. And luck and timing.
And just in timing.
Lead lined refrigerators.
Yeah. Right. See, I don't mind that kind of thing in a Indiana Jones movie. I mean, it is fine. I mean, he obviously is borderline, either superhero or some kind of enchanted, charmed individual, and charm things happen to him. So
I guess that
doesn't bother me.
I guess so. I mean, and that's what we love about him. He's swashbuckling. He's a throwback to the 30s serials. Like, it's all those things, and that's what it should be. And at its heart, it's always been true to that. I just feel like there was an energy and a, I don't know, something about the early ones. Maybe the whole thing is that I was a kid. I mean, maybe that's all this is. Yeah. Maybe 100% of that is this. And if I was some 40-something-year-old dude in 1981 or whatever the first one came out, I might have been Skeptical Bill going, man, this is just the shittiest. Why is this entertainment? This is old. I don't know what I would have done, but
I don't think you would have had any trouble being an older person when the first one came out. I think that one was accessible to most people. I think there was enough weirdness in the second one, even though I loved it at the time when I was a kid. I got to say that part two may have been more like, what? Pull that guy's heart out and it beats your hand. What? Yeah. This is crazy. Some kind of voodoo witch doctor.
All fit with a supernatural as opposed to aliens.
Yeah. Well, but what is alien stuff in this movie but supernatural?
It is, but that's the point. Like, there's something wrong. Why is it that my brain is perfectly willing to accept something like weird stones that make people crazy, or the Ark of the Covenant's got this power to it, or there's a, you know, the ancient curse that's on the freaking cup and all that? Like, why is that 100% fine with me?
Right.
But when they go alien, it feels like a weird, wrong move. It just feels wrong to me.
Because it changes the potential source of all the magic. And it does it in the fourth movie rather than like halfway through the first.
Right.
If it had been established early on that there is like a 2001 A Space Odyssey thing going on in Indiana Jones's universe, where there, you know, a lot of this stuff may have been originally touched by beings from another dimension, and that's why the Holy Grail is incredible, and that's why the Ark of the Covenant is incredible, and so on. Like, then you would have just been fine. You would have been just like, oh, I'm going to spend four movies getting to those aliens. That's kind of cool.
But
this feels like a retcon.
Yeah.
You can't help it.
Yeah.
There's been human magic up to this point.
No, what this feels like, this feels like Shia LaBeouf jumping a shark going, retcon! That's how this feels. Because I don't like that idea. Like, it's supposed to be mysterious. There's supposed to be dark, dank tombs. It's supposed to be ancient civilizations. And it's supposed to be perhaps dusted lightly with some mythological stuff. And that's great.
Right.
It's always
worked. It's supposed to be archaeology, not outer spaceology. Well, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? What's the
astronomy?
Astronomy,
Alien-thropology?
X-Files-ology.
Right.
Archaeology, not X-Files. Yeah, how's that?
Whatever it is.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think it's because it crosses over in this area instead of being more, I wouldn't say religious-based, because two of them were, well, it's like more religious-based in the prior ones, whereas this one seems to be more, like we said, alien based. I couldn't quite pick the difference, but they're all supernatural. But yeah, this is a different kind of supernatural than the previous.
It's
three.
It's something about us as humans, because we're intrigued by old things, and the older they get, the more mysterious they get, because the history around them is weird, or the people at the time, you know, would see an eclipse and think that this is some end of the world moment, and so they record it as such. They write down their histories of it, and they go. And it's passed down for generations. Oh, the day the sun was blotted out by Zeus himself. Like, they have fun with it, or we have fun with it, because they didn't know any better. And so there's something about that. And then when it leaks over and becomes real, it's like, oh, it's real. But it stays ancient and old and secret and hidden. So even when Indiana Jones gets back to town, he's pissed at Flubbers, or whatever his name is. What's his fat name in Star Wars?
What's his fat name?
Porkins. He's mad.
What's your fat name?
He's mad. He's mad at Porkins Flubbers. Because Porkins is just Flubbers. Hiding it. Right? They're not letting the world know. That's partly why I think Raiders works so well, because Raiders is willing to say archaeology, action, fun character bits, bat, love story, and at the end, mystical, magical, scary, and at the end, we're tucking it all away, because that's what we do here in America. And it's the nicest, neatest package. It is one of those movies I will go to my grave and say, Raiders of the Lost Ark is a perfect film for what it's trying to be, it's a perfect film. I love it from top to bottom, and it's packaged perfectly. I like Temple of Doom, but it's not packaged as well. And I like the third one, and it's just not packaged as well. This thing is just a scattershot of bullshit, and it's and it goes places it shouldn't go, and there's no tidying it up. Like, there's no tidying up this alien crap. It's just dumb. It's dumb. And I love the cast. Ray Winstone, one of my favorite actors. Love that guy. Could watch him do anything. Freaking, I love what's-her-name, Cate Blanchett. She's great. Don't care what she does. She's mesmerizing. Harrison Ford, everybody, except maybe Sheila Booth. But all of them are great. And then you just give me this thing that feels like you're just, I don't know, phoning it in. It's Spielberg and, you know, the two of the biggest filmmakers of all time making a thing about the, one of the greatest series of all time. And it should be better than this. It just should be better. Oh, yeah. I'm off my soapbox now. I'm fine.
Okay, thank you. I just want to follow on one little thing there. And that is, and we talked about this on FilmSack before. I got some heat from some listeners for saying this, but I think we need to retroactively bring Spielberg down a notch. I think we probably gave him too much credit for popularity and didn't notice that he's not the greatest filmmaker.
You can say that. I've had trouble with Spielberg, but I think he is like any other artist. I think through time, I think he's tried to be things other than Spielberg, and I think he was trying to be something other than Spielberg here. I think when he tries to do that, he missteps. But I've also seen him rebound. So I still think he is a. I think he's still always been a great director. I think he's always been a great visionary. I think he's just had, you know.
You guys are smoking.
He's had experiments.
Smoking crack, both of you, and this is what I'm going to say about that. He wedges these little throwaway popcorn movies in between Oscar-winning masterpieces. so I don't know if I buy that line. Now, if you want to say he's not as good of a general audience entertainer director anymore, I could buy into that. But if you look at the year 2008, which I'm doing now.
Don't look at it too long.
Hold on. Those are.
Don't look very.
His credits are ridiculously long here.
Okay. Turn into an ox.
Yeah.
Here we go. So 2008, Indiana Jones, Kingdom of Christmas Skull. Before that, he had Munich, The Terminal, Catch Me If You Can, Minority Report, AI. Okay, all that. After that, he had War Horse, Lincoln. Like Bridge of Spies. Like the dude. I don't think that's accurate. I think if anything, it's that he's having a hard time getting back to his childhood wonder years. And this is an example of that failing. And also, I don't want to put it all on him. I think George Lucas's script is just not great.
I don't think Spielberg is trying to get back to anything. I think maybe we're putting pressure on him. We would like for him to get back to where he was, but we're just
expecting the same things that were so influential to us in our youth. The things we loved as kids, we wanted to do those again. And those, we're different people now. We want different things out of movies. So if he were to deliver that sort of thing, we'd be disappointed.
Yeah. You're seeing someone who has the luxury of a great, you know, history where he can make a movie just because he wants to, and he can try different things, and they may fail.
Yeah.
And
last year was Ready Player One.
Yeah, kind of a throwaway, fun movie, rubbish. But kind of throwaway. Yeah, it's not. Right. You can have some
fun
with it.
We would
have
loved that a lot more when we were 14.
If I had seen it when I was 14, but had also had 40 years of history with video games, then somehow, if you can. And that's the problem. The story sucks. So he's like stuck with that. You know?
Yeah, that story's overrated. It's okay. It has some great ideas, but that
was all right.
Book's
I like
overrated.
The book.
It's really throwaway, though, when you're done with it. When I finished it, I went, oh, that was fun. Well, and then I quit.
That's what it's about. It's about popular culture. Of course, it's throwaway. That's what.
I'm just saying, there's not a lot of depth, and you're right. I totally agree with you. I think that's why it's a little bit throwaway. But for him to do Ready Player One right after he does The Post, an Oscar-worthy and winning film, that's his thing now. And I think that this was one of those. This was 10, 11 years ago, but it was just one of those. He just sneaks it in between. It's like when he did Jurassic Park and Schindler's List in the same year. And now Jurassic Park's a great movie. Don't get me wrong. I think he's still. Mm-hmm. Still one of his.
Movie's overrated.
Insane. You're insane. It's one of the best movies ever. I it's almost a perfect movie in my mind. But Schindler's List could not be more different, right? And so I don't know. He always just surprises me. I'm not willing to say, this is him losing it. Because since this 11 years ago, plenty of rad stuff. And he keeps doing little things in between. Here, I'll do the BFG. Where's that? Sandwiched right between Bridge of Spies and The Post. Right. When are you going to do The Adventures of Tintin? Right before I rap on Lincoln. Like, that guy is like nobody else.
Yeah.
It's insane. And I just think this is his biggest misstep. This and Hook are my least favorite movies he ever made.
And I want to be really, really clear. This is like a thing that I've talked about recently on this show where I'm saying what you guys are calling a 9, I'm calling a 7, right? Mm. The guy has made some insanely good movies in his career. Like, just off the top of my head, Spielberg made Empire of the Sun, The Color Purple, Saving Private Ryan, Amistad, Lincoln, Jaws, like Munich. I just think I named 8 movies, right? Mm-hmm. Really great films. Yeah. We'll add Jurassic Park. That's 8.
Yeah.
Really, really great films. Like, we disagreed on how good E.T. is when we went back and rewatched it. But like, those 8 films alone are unbelievable. Any director should want to have 8 legendary award-winning films like the ones I just named.
Yeah.
I'm just saying you can't count on him the way you can some directors that are really choosy and come along and make the auteur experience once every 4 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You just like, he's just not that.
Who would you put in that category now? Because I think I agree with this, but I'm trying to think who I would actually call that auteur that comes out every 4 years and then leaves. I don't know who that is. Is there somebody who's doing that still?
They all have their niche though. Like, that's the thing. Spielberg tries to be general, where, like, if you love Martin Scorsese, I think he is sort of the gold standard, right? If you love Francis Ford Coppola, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, but I've seen Godfather 3. It's terrible. It's terrible. He couldn't have screwed that up more, and nobody really understands why. I still don't. But to go from 1 and 2, which are masterpieces, to 3, which is seriously a garbage poop shoot, is so bad.
Garbage.
And so I think they're all fallible. I think Scorsese's got he's got stuff that I go, what were you doing? Like, I think we have to get away from this idea that there's any such thing as a, like, the only guy that's really never let me down right now working modernly is Denis Villeneuve. Every one of his movies
there was one misstep, but you're right, he has been most consistent for me.
Yeah.
What about Christopher Nolan?
I think that Christopher Nolan's third Batman movie sucks. I don't think that third Batman movie's good. So,
wow, okay.
Yeah.
I disagree with that.
We should have a whole show about this.
It's not as good as the first two, but I don't think it's a misstep. I just think it's not as good as the first two.
But it's another Batman movie. Like, what can you do after Dark Knight? But like, if you love Guillermo del Toro, like, he makes a movie for you every time. If you love Darren Aronofsky, he's making movies for you every time. And Spielberg just is a really general director who does a lot of different things. And the BFG sucks.
Mm. Hey, whoa, back up the truck, my brother.
Sorry, I meant to say, and Minority Report sucks, Brian.
BFG does not suck.
And I love Minority Report. I mean, we could get into the nitty and the gritty of all the, I like this, you don't, that sort of thing. But if you just look at, like, full careers, there's nobody like him. There's nobody who's got the impact that Spielberg's had. I think that's just not an, it's a completely solid position to take. That
a category of one, in terms of directors. Like when I start saying things like, what about directors who've made lots of films, like Woody Allen or Spike Lee, or even in their weird, like a person like Wes Anderson, who makes a really genre film.
Yeah,
you know, you're just gonna go like, how are you comparing these people to Steven Spielberg because of those greatest hits?
Yeah, no.
I don't think Steven Spielberg really should shoulder the blame for Crystal Skull too. I don't think the problem was directing. I think the problem was writing, and that's Jeff Nathanson and George Lucas.
Yeah. Yeah. Those guys deserve, who's Jeff Nathanson?
Jeff Nathanson, by the way, wrote Speed 2. Come on. Speed 2.
Oh my Lord. I gotta
Catch Me If You Can, which is, really
I gotta nice. Disagree a little. I gotta disagree a little bit because, George Lucas didn't use a lot of CG in that jungle scene, I don't think. Oh, so the problem wasn't
the CG. I mean, the CG in the jungle scene was noticeable. The CG, you know, the prairie dogs and stuff. I mean, but it's right. But it comes down to who wrote the jungle scene. Who said, "Hey, let's Shia LaBeouf,
rack is nuts,
city kid, all of a sudden be as good as Tarzan at swinging through vines and then be able to travel faster than cars on vines."
Yeah, that's my chief complaint, is that I know we're supposed to check our brain at the door a little bit with these Indiana Jones movies. That's part
check
of the
crystal skull at the door.
It's part of the arrangement, but you can't have 63-year-old Harrison Ford flying through miles of air and then massive wipeouts on the dirt and ground in a radiation-filled nuke explosion and have him survive. I'm sorry, you just can't. He's not living through that. So you can't. I mean, Temple of Doom makes some of these same mistakes, and it's why a lot of people put it lower on their list. And I agree with that. I think I like Temple of Doom a lot more than a lot of people, but I think it's got these kind of same problems. Like a lot of the same issues happen.
The raft out of the plane, and you know, coming landing perfectly on the mountain to be able to just slide down comfortably and land.
But coming to Last Crusade was them going, all right, you guys, ground yourselves a little here. Let's go. Let's get back to why. Let's get back to a more. You know, this is how Indiana Jones should be, and not quite so wacky. And they got it. They nailed that there, and they still had their little magic bit at the end, but they save it till the end, just like the arc. That's what you do. This is the part of the trope they didn't do this time, and it's just screwy. The minute there's a head with freaking alien eyes in it, I'm out. I'm just like, all right, because aliens aren't, you can't, at least with archaeological digs, you can go, oh, this ark is a thing that we found in the dirt. And we know it exists because we've found all these books, and there's all this intrigue and mystery about ancient writings and everything. This is just hokum a jokum. It's that guy with the dumb hair on History Channel going aliens with his hands out. Like, I just can't do it as well.
I feel like I kind of liked some aspects of the alien idea. I really thought the kernel of idea they had in the beginning that kicked this off, I think would have been a really good end product if they could have brought it in a different way.
Well, and it would have been fine in a different movie, you know, in a movie series that didn't deal more with in a movie series that wasn't archaeology focused for the first three films and then moves into aliens.
Yeah, because
so you're saying something like sudden, Stargate would be great.
If instead of deciding to be to explore space, if the Star Trek Enterprise crew decided to, well, I was going to say do aquatics, but that would be Star Trek IV.
You're basically describing Daniel's archaeological character in Stargate. I mean, that's basically what Stargate is.
But that's the whole premise of that. Why do I love? I make all this bad talk about aliens, but I love X-Files. Love it. It's one of my favorite series of all time. I loved everything about X-Files. Why? Because the premise was consistent mostly throughout. There's some trouble in the later seasons, but whatever. It was pretty much a consistently, are they out there? I want to believe. Who's the smoking man? Like, great stuff like that. And they were consistent with it. This thing says, all right, I know we spent a lot of time with ancient human history. Now we're going to play around with 1950s hypothetical alien man. Like, it's
we often think, and the reason why X-Files works, in my opinion, is because the show is not really about aliens. It's about conspiracy and FBI and the conspiracy to hide information, information to find it.
Yeah.
So it all works fine there. And this movie was also about the real gold for humans is our knowledge. And this is a quest for knowledge. It kind of played in because he's a teacher and he's always trying to impart knowledge, and it's very important to his character, but it never quite gels. And yeah. I'm not arguing with you. I think there was some potential here, but it just never reached it. But it's still a fun movie.
If this woman with you is the lady that was literally tied to a pole with you and had to close your eyes while God's giant monster ghost ripped a bunch of Nazis apart. Like, yeah. You just don't have petty arguments about who's dating who and why am I... Yeah. Like, you're past that. You've transcended that. You're on a different level now. I'm not saying it makes it so that you should stay together or any of that, but you shouldn't be sitting around arguing about that stuff. It's just like
But isn't that one of the charms of Indiana Jones? His character never changes. And so as a result, his character really never changes, or relationships never really change as well.
Well,
but I feel like that's the flaw.
Like, yeah, the biggest flaw
in this film is that it doesn't show that over the course of the series anything has changed for anyone.
Mm. Right.
And it should.
That's the idea behind a serial. I mean, your character never evolves. It's just here's the adventure next week.
Yeah, imagine if MacGyver was slowly getting more and more depressed until he just couldn't do anything because all of these crazy experiences were taking their toll.
Right. Oh, that's too funny.
I just don't have it in me to bend a paperclip anymore. Man. Yeah. I'm done.
Just blow me up.
Yeah.
Blow me up already.
I do really like I wanted to finish the previous discussion with a question, which was, who would you have had direct this? Because I have a really good answer for that time, for 2008.
Spielberg.
Who would you have had direct this, and maybe exert some influence on it in their style and whatever?
Oh, man. I mean, Gareth Edwards, who did the King or the Godzilla reboot, he also did that Star Wars movie some people like and some people don't. But a guy like that maybe, or... who else is doing fun action stuff these days?
Well, J.J. Abrams, kind of the Super 8.
Yeah, but isn't he basically just Spielberg light, kind of, you know?
Sure, and maybe that's what we need, though. Maybe we need someone who's looking at this with fresh eyes and isn't saying, well, in the fourth movie, he needs to have a baby, and in the fifth movie,
No, that's fair, but I also don't love what he did to the Star Trek movies exactly in the second one, anyway. I don't know. I want Spielberg to do it again. I'm fine with that.
I do too. I mean, a do over. That's kind of how I feel too. It's like, Spielberg, just try again. How about Guillermo del Toro? Right.
So I feel like that's a bit of a reach. And like, if you were making this movie now, I would want one of the younger, like the directors in their 30s, like Ryan Coogler or Jordan Peele or Taika Waititi to have a crack at it. But in 2008, I've been thinking about like, how interesting would the Alfonso Cuarón version of this movie have been? Like, he had made Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, right?
Yeah.
He had made Children of Men, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You've got that Roma that Ibbot likes so much. Like that Roma movie.
Roma's gonna win the best picture. I just didn't like it as much as the other ones.
Yeah, but yeah, no. There's other people that could tackle this. I just feel like I don't know, dude. I want the Spielberg thing. I just want a better story, and I don't think that was on him here. And also, those guys have been friends too long. They walk around and money is stuck to them constantly. Like they don't have the perspective they used to have. Certainly, Lucas doesn't. From his early days. And so different writer.
Guys, and we'll talk about this again in 3 weeks, but do not count out Black K Klansman for the Oscar for Best Picture. Like, I could see them giving director to Cuarón and splitting it so that they're able to have Spike Lee on the stage at the end.
Yeah, I did enjoy Black Klansman.
Yeah. I hear that's great.
One of my two favorite movies that have black in the title that are nominated.
What's the other one? Black Book? What is it?
Black Panther.
Oh, Black Panther. Oh, yeah, duh. That's the only other one with a black in it. Yeah. That sounded wrong out of context. That's the only other one with a black in it.
There's a black in that one.
I heard there's a few blacks in there. I've heard.
I got to go. It's been good doing shows with you guys.
All right. Gross moment. You guys have a...
I got a gross moment.
What is it?
Gross moment that freaked me out. Maybe not you.
Let's see.
When Shia LaBeouf reaches over to the table next to him and goes, pardon me while I dip my comb in your Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
Dip.
Yeah.
And starts brushing his hair.
Yeah.
Yeah. What the hell was that about? That was gross.
I don't know.
Yeah. That was
pomade. Coca-Cola pomade.
Yeah. You done with this soda?
You guys are squares. I know what I'm doing, Daddy-O. Like, I hate that whole era. Oh my gosh. I hate it. Kind of the Greaser Rebellion 50s thing. It sucks. It's not fun. I don't like it. I'm the wrong guy for it. I'm sure somebody somewhere is like, yeah, but Happy Days are freaking winning. No, It's all bad. The Fonz was bad. It's bad. Okay? It's not good. Mm-hmm. Greasers, freaking the movie Grease. F you. Not watching you ever again.
Really?
Oh, I hate it. I hate it. That's not an air I like. Rolling up your cigarettes in your little freaking wife beater short sleeve shirt and the freaking pants with the cuffs there at the bottom and the whole... I hate it. Beatniks and like that whole like beat poetry stuff they used to do.
Tell us what you really think, Scott.
I didn't need this movie to be set so late. I could have taken it 5 years or 7 years earlier than the setting.
I thought it was
kind of odd. 57, that was like near the end of one of the Red Scares, right? I mean, so it was kind of
But they didn't really make much of that. Like, the Russians are here. Okay, we didn't. The movie doesn't depend on that. They could be Russians, and it could have been 1951 or 1949.
Yeah. According to trivia, there was going to be some holdout Nazis, like leftover Nazis.
Leftover Nazis.
Oh, no, not the leftover Nazis.
leftover Nazis. Ugh. Cook those thoroughly.
You wake up the next morning and you're like, oh, we had a big party last night.
Oh. Yeah. Sir, do you want a box for your Nazis? Take them. Man.
Will you take those home? Should I wrap them up for you?
He's always said that he regrets the way he portrayed Nazis in the Indiana Jones movies and would never treat them lightly again. Ever since Schindler's List and all the stuff he learned there. So I suspect that was cut because he's not into it now, but who knows? Right. The Russians, he was perfectly happy to make fun of these Russians, though. It's like, let's do it. Let's have ridiculous accents. A lot of those guys are Russian actors, but she is obviously not. But
Not. And obviously. So him sussing her out by her accent and deciding that she's from not Eastern but Western Ukraine, I was just like, no, I'm sorry, no. Not Cate Blanchett.
I learned accent from watching Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Exactly. That's what it sounded more like.
I don't know I know you're doing a Rocky and Bullwinkle thing, but I don't know what character that is.
I'm doing Natasha.
Oh, okay. That's a lady. All right. For me, it was
like, if he had said, you sound like you're from Melbourne, Australia, doing a Ukrainian accent, then I would have laughed and enjoyed it. I don't know.
Say what you want about Russians and Russian mobs and Russian crime and Russian and all the good things that happen in Russia, good people in Russia, all that. Forget about all of it. What I want to complain about with the Russians is that shitty dance they do. That thing where they kick their feet out and have the short legs.
Well, they have their arms folded and doing the...
Yeah, it makes my back hurt to look at it. I can't even stand watching it because it looks like it hurts and it annoys me. I don't know why. It just didn't know. It always has. If you'd have asked me when I was 10, I'd have told you the same thing. Like, why do they dance like that? That's stupid. Like, I hate it. I don't know why. I just hate it. This that, hey, you bushka, bushka, bushka thing where they're kicking their legs out. Sucks.
Yeah, it's called Prisyadka. Prisyadka.
Jeez, look at this. Look at the info coming out of you. Oh, yeah. Well, those fighter guys down there in the temple, that was called capoeira.
Capoeira. Yes.
Boy, was it.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
I guess capoeira was having a moment in 2008.
Maybe they were.
The natives in the final alien temple were doing the lambada.
Yeah, they were. Finally,
we need to watch one of those on FilmSack. Yeah, by the way,
we should do that.
I'm ready.
Yeah, we should do that.
My body is ready for us to watch that crap.
So the one thing that should have been grosser, but wasn't so much because I knew it was CGI, but I kind of wished it wasn't. It's a Russian guy trapped by ants and a whole crap load of them just funneling down his throat.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty
cool.
There
was a lot of ant goo porn, right? Like Cate Blanchett slamming her legs together and splattering ant on the camera.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Wow.
Yeah, a couple times I was like, was this meant to be 3D? Because this almost has a 3D vibe.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Maybe they did do a 3D showing. No, this would have been pretty
too early.
Yeah, Avatar was the next year or something. Which is weird. If you say to me, when was Avatar and when was Crystal Skull, I'd swap the order. Because my brain just works that way. It's just weird. This movie does not feel as old as it is. Because I think it's because it was so in our face and so speaking to us as our generation of lovers of Indiana Jones and was so anticipated and blah, 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 that it's a thing out of time. I don't really think of it as 11 years ago. It feels like last year.
Does it suffer the curse of high expectations?
Oh, yeah. Like, big time. Like, that's my biggest thing. I think my expectations were way, way higher than what we ended up with getting. I think, for me anyway. I mean, I can only speak for me, but I think this thing had ridiculous expectations attached to it. And how do you, you know, how do you achieve that? The only reason the Star Wars, the new Star Wars movie, particularly 7, did okay, I think, critically and with fans, was they played it so damn safe. And just stuck to the script, right? They just went, oh, well, this is a Star Wars movie, so let's basically make episode 4 again. Everybody loves that, so here's that. Here's one of those. Whereas this was them, you know, it's like I'm at a cross point here. It's like on the one hand, I want them to make a better movie. On the other hand, in a lot of ways, Crystal Skull plays it safe because they know what we want out of an Indiana Jones movie. I don't know, man. The movie just conflicts me. I'm conflicted.
So what's another movie that pops to mind for you that was super anticipated and that cursed the outcome of the audience and you don't get to say Star Wars Episode 1?
Oh, well, what about Star Wars Episode 7?
What about or 2 or 3 or any of those?
Yeah, right.
I mean, that is your ultimate example, but what else out there? I don't know.
Ghostbusters, the female Ghostbusters?
Maybe that. Oh, yeah. Sure. I had high expectations for that, and that's just not a good movie. It's not that I didn't have any problem with the female cast. In fact, they're all great. I loved all the ladies in it. I love the idea of it. It's just a poorly made film. It would have been.
That was all right.
It was not all
right. I wouldn't say it's a poorly made film.
It's a piece of poop.
It's not a piece of poop.
It is a piece of poop. It's like a little piece of poop.
What Rotten Tomatoes score do you give a piece of poop usually?
I'd put it in like the 20 range.
20.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Out of 100. Yeah. If it's any 20, less.
Out of 100. Yeah. I'm going to say 20 out of 100.
Yeah. What would you, what did it get? Go look it up.
Well, let's say the freshness rating was a 74.
Oh, really?
Wow.
And this movie also suffered from something that the Crystal Skull suffered from, which is okay or not the worst critical reviews, but, audience review scores lower. Usually the critical reviews seem to be lower typically.
Yeah. Oh, this 2016 was 70. How was it? Oh, that movie sucks.
What? It didn't suck that bad.
Ghostbusters 2016, Melissa McCarthy, Kristen Wiig, Kate McKinnon movie. I mean,
I thought it was better than the old one with the men.
Well, wait. You're not saying the original Ghostbusters.
The first one? Now you're going too.
Yeah,
I hope you're going too far.
You mean two? if you're saying Ghostbusters 2, you and I are in a complete agreement. If you're saying Ghostbusters 2, if you're saying Ghostbusters 1, here is the moment, everybody, where Randy and Scott part ways forever.
I wanted to say, like, on the topic of anticipating films, the one that I think a lot of people forget also happened in 2008, which was. Low, not great expectations for Casino Royale led to incredible expectations for Quantum of Solace. Yeah. And Quantum of Solace could not possibly stand up to the expectations that were coming into it. So same year as Crystal Skull, people went and saw a James Bond movie and were like,
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. There's plenty of these. I think there's lots of movies we could look at and go, overhyped, didn't live up to it. The Matrix sequels, there you go. Those are two that just...
Oh, yeah, good very good. Yeah,
yeah, those made you want to die, right? I wanted to die in those movies. I was like, come on, just kill me. All right, let's get to... let's do some clips here from our fine film. There aren't a ton because it's just... I don't know, there's not a lot of like, oh, that's a goofy piece of dialogue, I should capture that. Instead, it's just a lot of random stuff. So one of the things I always appreciated about the Crystal Skull or the Indiana Jones movies in general... is I think they have excellent punching sounds. Someone gets hit in the face, it's always fantastic and over the top and great. And
The freshest meat gets hit in the Foley studio.
You're right. Only the biggest slab of beef possible gets punched.
Right.
And that's what this sounds like. Oh, it's so good. It's the best punching. Name a movie with better punching. And the first movie, Raiders also had it. It was great. Just lots of good... Oh, right in the freaking...
Yeah, there's like a... Like a drum sound in there.
Yeah. Like a little
sound of like
a little bass. Yep.
The sound of like a 2x4 hitting a wall.
It's so good. All right. Here's him figuring out accents.
Well, the way you're sinking your teeth into those wubble-yous, I should think maybe Eastern Ukraine.
Wubble-yous.
Wubble-yous. kind of made me want to die there a little bit. All right, here, hard man to read.
You're a hard man to read, Dr. Jones.
Ouch.
I don't know why he said ouch. Why would he say ouch?
That was an insult?
I don't know. That's why I kept the ouch in there, because I don't understand it.
I like to pride myself on being easy to read.
That's right. I belong in a museum, Dad. All right, here's another one. This is a pseudo sequel to Seven. So here you go.
What was in the box?
It was the head of Gwyneth Paltrow.
What was in the box? Yeah. Come on.
What was in the box?
What was in the box?
Did Harrison Ford ever do a movie with Brad Pitt, or am I making that up? Was he ever?
Yes.
Did they ever do
what
something?
Did they do. They did. They did do something.
Crimea River.
Crime of passion. Or like it was a
crippling, crippling passion. Crimea
River. The Devil's Own.
The Devil's Own.
That's it. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. And he was like a hitman or a bad guy or something. Brad Pitt was, and then I don't know how it went.
He committed a crime of passion in that film.
Oh my gosh. He brought him a box and he said,
what was in the box?
Okay, great. Here's a better, everything's better with Broadbent. That's my BWB is my theory on all movies. Better with Broadbent.
The FBI showed up this morning, ransacked your office, searched all your files.
All my files?
Yes, I can. I just want him to sing. I love him. He's so great. Harry Potter is great in that. It's great in everything. Name something Brent, Jim Broadbent doesn't make better if he's in it. Name it. You can't. It's not possible. They're all better.
How about my lunch? Get out of there.
Get out of there, Jim Broadbent. Dead. Okay, you're right. It makes your lunch worse if he's in your lunch. If Jim Broadbent's digging through your tuna salad, it's worse.
Right. It's not better.
You know. All right. Here we get to meet Mutt.
Name's Mutt. Mutt Williams.
Mutt?
Yeah.
Guy, her name is
it's the one I picked. You got a problem with it?
Take it easy.
Take it easy, kid.
It's one I picked, and I am the screenwriter, and I was trying to foreshadow that he comes from two different backgrounds biologically.
Yeah.
And also, we named the dog Mutt.
We named the Mutt Indiana. Hey, you know what? The trivia claims, I don't know if this is true, but claims that John Williams goes by the nickname Mutt Williams, and that was an honor to him. Which, by the way, stellar work as always from John Williams. He makes good soundtracks, turns out. And
he doesn't care about the crap on screen. He just makes the music good.
Yeah, that's all that matters. All right. Now, this is what happened after Ibbitt pulled his wiener out on prom night, okay? This is some exclusive audio. I don't know how your mom finds this stuff, but I'm super glad that she thinks of me when she finds it.
I feel like we've heard this one before.
I just want
to say that.
You might have, but here's the reaction to... Again, Brian Ibbitt with his wiener out on prom night.
He's been wrapped up for 500 years. Air doesn't agree with him.
There you go.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
It just vaporized as soon as the zipper opened.
Yeah, got to give it some air. All right, talking over each other like a podcast is what this sign or this clip reminded me of.
How many good men died because of you?
I don't have any idea what either one of them said to each other.
The McLaughlin Report or something there is what we're listening
angry
to.
Angry acting.
Yeah, it's like a Fox News channel.
How many good men died because of you?
Okay, geez.
They're in four different quadrants on the screen.
Yep. Nobody can agree. Pundits, everywhere you look. All right, here's a nose breaking.
I'm going to break your nose.
That's pretty good. I like that.
Mm-hmm. And he did.
Well, he can do it twice. By going, there you go. I should play those later.
That sound was made by, it's made by... hitting some gloves and some jackets with a baseball bat.
Oh,
I think it's a cane hitting a watermelon.
This sound
according
again?
To the according oh. to the link I posted.
Oh, really?
Oh, let me see. I want to see
in the Discord.
Discord.
Oh, yeah, you sure did.
Hold on.
Punch is created from hitting gloves and jackets with a baseball bat.
Why didn't I get it in the Discord? Oh, I did. There you go. Oh. Indiana punch sound tutorial.
Wow.
Cool. Let's see. The Sound Keeper. Indiana Jones recreate. Oh, so they recreate it. Oh, interesting. Punch and whip tail distorted? What's this? Oh wow.
Yeah, he did some. He went and watched a bunch of interviews with Ben Burtt, who did, I guess, the sound work.
Yeah. Oh, Ben Burtt's famous for this stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, listen to that whip. Oh, listen. It's cool, dude. Okay, I'll dig with that later because that's awesome. Nice find there, Dunaway.
That is really cool.
Why is my dog in here whining? Why are you even in here? How'd you get in here?
What do you want, Mutt?
Yeah.
Mutt. Yeah, Mutt. Exactly.
Get out of here, Mutt Williams. All right, here's a line.
You're my dad.
I don't. here's a comment I don't remember the context, so I'll just play it.
I usually do.
Oh, it's the way she says it. I hate how she says it.
I usually do.
I usually do.
Usually do.
I usually do.
She was sounding like she was doing something somewhere between Dolph Lundgren and Sylvester Stallone there. That was.
Even in a cheesy role like this, I find her captivating.
Oh, yeah.
Just so.
Yeah, she's not. She's one of the better things in this film. Accent aside, she's still, you know, she's effing Kate Blanchett.
Yeah.
She's FCB.
Yeah. That's a movie you don't want to see. Effing Kate Blanchett. Don't look for it. Here's John Hurt. I haven't played him yet. He didn't talk a lot, but when he did, he said words.
Return.
Like that. He'd say return or whatever. And then finally.
You looking for a date?
Yes, I sure am there, Mr. Jones. Mr. Dr. Jones. All right. That's
I was hoping you'd have the very last thing, which was like run away like you did, and then it's almost like the end of a sitcom where everybody just starts laughing and they freeze frame.
Yeah.
Oh, that Mutt.
That's a great idea. Someone should do that. All right. Here's what is this?
Shit.
Oh, sorry. I'm not supposed to play that. This. It's Der Film's Shack checklist, the Film Sack checklist. We get getting whacked off a cliff with a rubber tree. Check. That happened to a few people. That didn't sound right. Ants of Red Make Me Wet the Bed. Check.
That's good.
And we miss John Hurt. Check. That's the truth.
Oh, it hurts to miss John Hurt.
Yeah, it does. Star Trek Connections, we have a few. Pashta D. Lincolnkoff.
That's Pistachio.
Sure. He's a Russian soldier. He played a Romulan commander in the 2009 Star Trek. John Braver. He's staff car driver and did stunts. He also stunt doubled for Tom Hardy in Nemesis and for Farron Tahir and background stunt performer in 2009 Star Trek. And then Alan Dale. He played General Ross, not to be confused with the one from The Hulk.
Right. Not Thunderbolt Ross.
No. He played Ross. Praetor Hiron in Star Trek Nemesis. A lot of Nemesis actors in here, which is a way better Star Trek movie than you guys all remember. It's fantastic.
What year was Nemesis?
2002? One? It was right. I know it opened the weekend one of the Lord of the Rings movies opened, and it was a terrible idea that they did that.
Right. Oh. Yeah, 2002.
Yeah.
Paul Scott.
But I love them. I think Nemesis is rad, and people who disagree with me can bite my chode. All right, here's a Twitter post where you guys sum it up. Oh, we already said Soundtrack Grave is great. It's good. The Twitter post where you guys sum it up in 280 characters or less. Let's begin with Randy Jordan.
Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Very many men and two women wrestle for hours to establish that one of the women is taken by the alpha male, just like a Saturday night at Ibbot's house.
Gotta let it air out.
I always forget that might be coming.
Yeah.
Just like a Saturday night.
Yeah, see? It works with anything. It really kind of the greatest thing. Yeah. I love it. Okay, who's next? Dunaway.
Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. And I'm out of characters. No, wait. I got a few more. If reacting is acting, then Spielberg captured all of that and a greasy LaBeouf.
Greasy LaBeouf, that's a bad sex move. Don't ever.
That was a lot of Spielberg is very much directs his actors to forward the action with very long and deep reactions to everything they see.
Yeah.
It's one of the things I actually enjoy, but can become annoying if you become too aware of it.
If you pay too much attention to it, you're going to get in trouble. Mm-hmm. And then someone will poke you with a puke stick. All right, finally,
stop it.
Brian Ibbett.
Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Ever since Indiana Jones drank out of that old man's sippy cup, he's been acting really strange.
You've chosen wisely. Wesley. All right, here's this.
Wait, don't take it. Don't take it out of the room.
Don't take it out of the room. You're going to turn into a crusty old man. I just got handed these alternative titles. This movie was almost called Indiana Jones and the Lack of Radiation Poisoning Despite Direct Contact.
I was going to guess that the grossest thing for you was them taking this brush on the end of a stick to your junk.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
I was
a bath.
If somebody came at my junk with a broom, I would die.
Yeah. You would die before I even got there.
He just died right there.
Yeah, he'd die before he even got there. The other choice was Indiana Jones and The Last Idea. So there's that, and it didn't quite go.
And we're all out of ideas.
Yeah, we're all out of ideas now. Hey, check it out. We got some emails from listeners. These come to us at filmsack@gmail.com. I got two quick ones. First one comes from Kevin, who says, "My friends." Oh, I like this. On your latest episode or recent episode of District 9, you mentioned managed to get through an entire episode without using your favorite four-letter words. This is the guy that's keeping the swear jar for us.
Oh, wow. Okay. Jeez.
Says, yes, Dunaway, let's slip the word dick, but I will allow it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is that a bad word?
He says he'll allow it. It depends on context, I think. Dick, okay. Dick can be all taken right. Places.
Apologies.
I will. He says, I will.
Well said.
Yeah, that's true. It's very portable. I will take this heavy jar to my credit union where there will be no fee for cashing in coins and send you the entire contents plus a little extra on top. You mentioned the great Brian Regan, who manages to do clean content brilliantly. You are such great conversationalists, and I want to commend you for that episode and for what you all do every week. Kind regards, aww. Kevin. Well, we've blown it a little bit this week. There's been a couple of S words this week. Sorry. Yeah.
Wait a minute. Yeah. Wait a minute. If we were to curse more, we would get more money.
Yeah.
He'd be taking more money to the credit union.
Yeah.
You're tempting us in the wrong direction.
Yep. Ass bitch. Yeah. Shit. Ass bitch. Fit. Shit.
No. Hey. 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 I don't want to make money that way.
Shit.
That would be.
I do.
Randy. I do.
What?
The way you
I'm
said
a gamer.
It.
No, the I'm way a gamer. I want to min-max this shit.
The way you said it was really funny.
Like, I think you should go back and bleep as many of these at the end here as you can, because it's way funnier to hear the bleeps than the actual words.
Yeah, and I'm going to bleep every time the word Kevin comes up. Just kidding, Kevin. I love his emails. It's great stuff he's doing that. Yeah, he sent a picture. Sure. I don't have it here, but it's a photo of a jar full of pennies and coins and things. It's pretty great.
That's awesome.
Bernie Walter also wrote in and says, guys, it's not good. Where do I even start? He's talking about this movie. The sets look incredibly fake, even though they had a budget of $185 million. The film spends the first 15 minutes batting you over the head with the idea that it's the 1950s. Steven Spielberg, a couple of establishing shots could have been done in 3 to 5 minutes. Cate Blanchett is reduced to speaking in a bad accent. The stunts are run-of-the-mill and ridiculous at the same time. The story feels like a generic knockoff of an Indiana Jones movie. I think we made that pretty clear. If the title had been anything else on it, this would have been easier to swallow. Shia LaBeouf is terrible. About the only good thing this movie has to offer is that it's under 2 hours. I skipped like 15 minutes of this film and missed nothing. Rotten Tomatoes has the film at 78 and Certified Fresh. They are wrong, but I love Film Sack, though.
They are wrong.
Yeah. I mean, look, some of that I agree with, some of it I don't. I think we can all agree that we hope whatever 2021's deal is, which would be set. Okay, let's think about this. If this is set in 57, would that be set in like 65 or 6?
If
they don't go prequel or, or something in between one of the other movies. Which okay. Could totally do.
And do you think, let's take a bet, LaBeouf back or no?
No,
he
no,
said publicly.
Explain his absence, though, is the problem. Well, if you don't have LaBeouf, you have to explain why he's.
Oh,
not
easily,
there.
He'll have a picture on his desk, and he'll be looking up longingly, and he'll go, "I hate that
I can't believe gone. That imposter tried to pawn himself off as my son."
Yeah, or I hate that I had to kill him.
He's going to be married. I'm not sure I want this.
Okay, now here's the thing,
honey. I'm off to go go in a cave and look for artifacts.
What if they get. What I would prefer? Here's what I prefer.
I'm not sure I want this.
Here's what I want Spielberg to do.
I'm going
to
tell you.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you what you want.
All right.
You want this movie that we just watched referenced him being captured by Pancho Villa, which is going to be like 1920, 1921.
Oh, we do another jump back
gonna,
like we did with
We're going to have a 1921, and this is important, starring Alden Ehrenreich.
Who the hell's
this
that?
This is very important.
Who's that? I don't know who that is. Who's Alden Ehrenreich?
Han Solo.
Yeah.
Oh, he'd be all right. Yeah, he'd be great.
Harrison Ford and Solo.
No, he'd be great.
Think about it.
I still think Chris Pratt could probably pull it off. I think you're not wrong. And that was exactly what I was going to say. What I want is not to continue the timeline. I want to just have some adventures in the past, cast somebody new, maybe one of those dudes, maybe not, but whatever. Spielberg, you still direct it. You still make these movies. I'm fine with that. But just go back and have him looking for the secret trinket of the ancient deal.
Secret trinket.
We already know, thanks to the TV show, we already know he lives well into his like 80s and beyond.
Yeah.
So we don't have to like have the constant suspense. Will Indiana Jones make it out of this one? Well, yeah, of course he will.
Or have Ford waddle out of the bathroom in a bathrobe, sit down in a chair, and flick open a book like freaking Bilbo Baggins and go, hey, look at this time I did a thing. The camera zooms in.
Let me tell you about the time I...
Why don't you bring your little of your Ready Player One into this, Spielberg, and you can
Indiana Jones
playing some Lego Indiana Jones in his VR. That'd be awesome.
No, please. You're making a terrible suggestion. Please don't ever
tell you
do
about
that.
The time I got the Rosetta Stone.
I'm telling you, go back in time, do it in the 30s or 30s, preferably, yeah, before Ark, and just go swashbuckle your way through the awesomeness that can be Indiana Jones. Like, go.
I am begging the universe to make Alden Ehrenreich the new young Indiana Jones. I think it's such a great idea because, like, we deserve to have an experience where a famous actor ages out and is replaced entirely by another famous actor.
Yeah, even though Solo wasn't that great, it wasn't that kid's problem. He was cool. I liked him in it.
Yeah, remember before we saw it and everybody was like, oh, you're not going to like Alden Ehrenreich. You're not going to like him. You know what? No, I liked him. I thought he was perfect for it.
I liked him too.
He was as good as that's going to be.
Yeah.
It was just a jumbled story with a little bit too much sex bot romance.
It had problems. sex bot. Where was the sex bot in there? There was a sex bot?
Yeah, what's his name? Is in love with the robot.
Who is?
You're talking about Lando?
Yes, thank you.
You said sex bot. I thought you said sex pot.
Oh no, I forgot about that part. Yeah, that's the thing.
Oh no.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I freaking love that subplot, but it was, you know, it was disjoint.
Yeah, I no surprise here. Brian enjoyed Solo. I know.
No, I enjoyed it. I just didn't think it didn't live up to what I had hoped it would be, though. I had no expectations. Yeah, well, that's a way to live. You're giving us some good, solid ground level advice here. Lower your expectations for everything, and it'll all be better that way.
This is probably going to suck anyway, so let's go see it.
That's right. Well, listen.
Let's see how bad they screwed it up. Well, they didn't do so bad.
If you at home want to chime in on issues like this and more, just like Bernie and Kevin did, you can send us emails, filmsack@gmail.com. Next week, we're watching what, Randy Jordan?
We're watching Lee Marvin, Ernest Borgnine, Charles Bronson, John Cassavetes, George Kennedy, Telly Savalas, Donald Sutherland, and the greatest football player of all time, Jim Brown, in The Dirty Dozen.
Wow. I'm excited. The Dirty Dozen is a cool Western.
1967.
Yeah, cool Western. Not spaghetti. I would put this in the more Peckinpah range. Actually, who is the director of this? Hold on.
That would be Robert Aldrich, and it's pretty much his most famous film. I really want to save it for next week, though, so like don't preview it too hard.
Yeah, we won't do it too hard, but I really enjoy this movie when I've seen it, and it's been ages, so I'm excited to see it again. And the real test will be, you know, Ibbitt doesn't necessarily like traditional Westerns, non-modern, I guess.
Right.
I'd be really curious what you think. So this should be fun.
I'm curious as how I'm going to watch this. I something makes me want to go find like a console TV somewhere out like in Yorksville, black and white only.
Right.
And just
footy. Where are you going to watch it? Wearing like footy pajamas while you dang
Skippy.
One thing I just noticed here: there's only one person on this entire cast who's still alive. Donald Sutherland.
Jim Brown? No, is Jim Brown alive?
Donald? No, he's dead. Isn't he?
Oh. No, he's dead.
Okay. Hold on. Jim Brown. No, he's alive. Sorry. He's alive. Barely, probably.
Barely.
He's like 82, but yeah.
He's getting there. Donald Sutherland, though, and him. I guess those are the only two. Everybody else on here of note. John Cassavetes, Charles Bronson, Ernest Borgnine, Lee Marvin, they're all gone. George Kennedy, dead, McDead.
Dead actor.
Yeah.
Anyway, but like save it for next week. Gonna love it or gonna hate it. Something.
I think I'm gonna love it. I'm excited. All right. So there's that. That's next week right here on FilmSack. FilmSack.com. In the meantime, if you're looking for, links, archives, all that stuff, it's all available there. We're getting to the point where I may have to start splitting the feed to another, to an archive feed and doing less on this one because it's starting to get huge, this RSS file, which means every time anyone hits it, it downloads that. it gets out of hand pretty quick.
So we maybe put the first 200 episodes on one feed and then start a new one.
That's what I do on TMS. You get 200 of the new ones, and then there's an old feed where you can get the rest if you need it.
And then we lose the old feed, and then people complain, and it'd be great.
Shouldn't lose the old feed. The old feed's in the same place. It should. If we lose one feed, all of them are gone, honestly. So if you see that or that happens and you're concerned and you still want Kroll in your life, I'll make it clear where you do that. That'll be at filmsack.com. And, of course, as always, you can find us on Twitter at Filmsack. Leave us reviews wherever you get your podcasts. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Finish school.
We'll see you next time. Finish school. Oh, yeah, because you want to finish school. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're a hard man to read.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
What was in the box?
Here is the moment, everybody, where Randy and Scott part ways forever.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.